I'm Ken MacLeod. From the day we launched unfetteredmind.org, it has operated without a paywall, advertising, or a subscription charge. This is only possible through the generosity of people like you. If you find our materials useful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate. Thank you, and enjoy this podcast.
Unfettered Mind. Five elements, five Dakinis, practice.
Thursday morning, we've chosen to sort of organize our practice in terms of going through Wake Up to Your Life. And we've reached the chapter on, it's chapter six on dismantling reactive emotions, if I'm not mistaken. Yes. So we're going into Dakini practice. Excuse me. And it's a totally new practice for us because it's an imaginative practice. And the directions for the meditations are very specific. And it's just something new, and hopefully productive. but I for one, would like sort of to be helped into this new mode of practice. It's a lot of stuff to remember during the meditation itself. You know, the color, the Dakini, the jewel or the mirror, the particular symbol that's being used, the center of the body that we're working on at any given time. and I have a lot of specific questions that maybe we could deal with after meditation, but I was wondering if it might not be possible to be led through a Dakini meditation itself, or fruitful. I'm not sure if anybody else has an idea as to what we should do or approach this this resource of Ken.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's probably helpful to go through it as a guided meditation. Have any of you tried the these meditations? And how has it been for you?
Well, my technique was to make a cheat sheet. I made a little cheat sheet and put it right here. I had the color and now I got it, so I know where I go in my body. I can remember that stuff. It's just a few of the, I'll get to the middle and I'll be here and moving to the heart. I have to look every once in a while, but I just have a couple words by each thing.
Okay.
And colors, and it seems to work for me.
So.
It worked quite well for me. I found it to be one of the more effective meditations that I've tried, and I really loved it. But I'm here to learn more.
Okay.
I haven't tried it yet.
Okay.
I haven't tried it yet either.
Steve?
I haven't tried it.
Not yet. But I still have questions about this one area where it shows the going back to the circle, the recycling, and through that I need help with that. I don't exactly know how to do that, and I don't know how to get to that conclusion.
Okay. I think we'll do a quick demo first. So can I have two volunteers? One, Joe. Okay, you two stand up here. Now, you know the pose for push hands in Tai Chi, one hand just back to back? Yeah. That's right. Yeah, there you go. Now, I want you to go really slowly here. Because this happens really, really fast. Joe, you need to get this clearer in your body, so you are going to... what's your name again?
Betty.
Betty. And you started with B. Betty's going to push on you, okay? And you're going to be Earth, which means you're going to go rigid first, okay? So as soon as Betty pushes on you, and go, just push consistently, but you're already pushing too hard.
You're not supposed to push.
Hold up the microphone for them, Melissa. Okay, so Betty starts to push and you go rigid. Now just stop there and feel the rigidity, Joe. What do you experience in your body? Melissa, can you give them the mic?
Tension.
Okay. Now, underneath the tension, what do you feel?
Well, right now there's a little anxiety about it.
Yeah. And underneath the anxiety, what is there? So there's the tension, there's anxiety, that's all at this level. Underneath that?
Fear.
Okay, between the tension and the fear. As I say, this goes really fast.
Nothing. As in...
Nothing as in you can't sense it, or a feeling of nothing.
I'm not sure. I mean...
Okay, just relax, both of you. Okay. Now, start again. And this time, start feeling each other very softly. And then, Betty, you push just a very little bit on his hand. And you observe what happens in your body, Joe. Feel the tension. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's sort of
okay. Now, underneath the tension, what's there? She's just applying a little pressure, so it'll be easier for you to sense.
It's more confusion than an actual, you know, nothingness. It's
okay. Now, what I want you to do, Betty, is increase the tension, and Joe, you stay absolutely rigid in your whole body. Okay? Just increase the tension, Betty. Okay, now what are you feeling, Joe?
Well, because now my rigidity is conscious. It feels more like I'm in control. And it's
okay, so increase the tension enough that he begins to lose balance. Yeah, that's right. No, you've already gone through it 5 times. Right there. Okay?
No. That's how fast it happens, though.
Yeah, you went through it 5 times there. Start again. So just increase it a little bit. Put your weight on your back foot. It'll help you rather than your front foot, because you want to feel there's... And just signal or say something when you feel a little unstable. So increase the pressure, please, Betty. Oh, you're
right,
not?
There.
Okay, good. Now, so just open to that, just relax. Open to that feeling of instability. And what is the impulse in that feeling of instability?
At the moment, there was wanting to push back and grasp and firm up.
Firm up, right, okay. So go through and experience that again. Okay. Now, you feel that impulse to firm up?
Yes.
Okay. Now, feel how locked you are in your body?
Yes.
Okay. Now you're back in the rigidity.
Right.
Okay. That's the earth reaction cycle.
Right.
Okay.
Say that one more time, please.
Well, no, we're going to go through it in the chart. Right. Okay. So, open your text to... Isn't that wonderful thing? To page 225. And have your finger open to the chart on page 237 also. You have to look at two pages at the same time. Okay?
237.
Yeah. 235 and 237.
225.
235. Oh, sorry, 225 and 227. My mistake. You're quite right.
Okay.
Okay. So, on page 225, you have a reaction, which in this case is rigidity. And as your attention, are you with me? Just on 225 right now. And then we'll go to 227. In this, we're doing the earthing. Under first you have the reaction, which is rigidity. Underneath that reaction, there's a feeling, which is the hollowness, which you're experiencing is that nothing confusion thing. Okay? And underneath that is the fear. Okay? Now, this goes so fast that we aren't usually aware of it. We're just right into it. But that's why I was breaking it down, because in the case of Earth, the fear is fear of instability. You follow? The impulse, when we hit that fear of instability, is to tense, firm up. And that's the reforming part. And then we end up rigid again, and now we go through the cycle. And that's why I said at that one point in the ad interaction, you went through it five times, because Joe was going like this. And every one of those is going around that cycle. This is really, really fast what happens here.
So this, right at the top of this elliptical thing is an open space. Is that you resting in the fear? What is that?
I'm going to come to that in a minute, okay? I just wanted to get how it goes around that cycle. Now let's turn to page 227. The reaction is inflexibility and rigidity, okay, for Earth. Underneath is a feeling of hollowness or uncertainty. Underneath that is instability, which is experienced, if you actually open to that, as being in an earthquake. Right? It's just like, what happened? I mean, we've all been in earthquakes here, right? It's Southern California. Okay, what's the first thing you do when you experience an earthquake? Yeah, exactly. You just go like that. So you, and any time you find yourself going like this in a conversation or anything like that, it's because you're in the middle of the earth reaction right at that point. And as I say, these are really, really fast, and I'm going to say a word about that in a minute. So the impulse, once you hit that earthquake, that open space, that fear of instability, is to grasp, lock up, whatever. And the result is imprisonment in your own rigidity. But now you're rigid again, and now you go around it again. And it goes around and around and escalates really, really quickly. Okay? So that's how you go around that cycle.
And it, as you go around the cycle and you go back for the second time, are you, first of all, I don't know how to, I haven't yet felt that feeling of maybe uncertainty, but I don't know about hollowness. And, but as you go around in the meditation, are you supposed to...
I'll get to the meditation in a minute. I just want to get recognizing these things first.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Steve?
I'm connected. At some point in this cycle, does the rigidity, in the instability aspect, does the rigidity give way? Or do you stay rigid?
Rigidity is the form aspect, a form pole of the cycle. The earthquake is the emptiness pole of the cycle. And what you're doing is going around and around from form to emptiness, form to emptiness. Okay? And as I say, it's really, really fast. So, Betty, you didn't experience that hollowness. So now it's your turn. Joe, Betty, please.
Who made up this stuff is what I want to know. Who picked hollowness? Who picked it? How'd you know?
Some people pay attention to their experience. I benefit from their efforts. Okay. Now, that's a good way to stand. Just, you know, and now just be completely rigid with your weight on your back foot. Joe, you start to push her. Make your arm far more rigid, Betty. It's like iron. It doesn't bend at all. Okay, now, stop. You went through it about 5 or 6 times there. So start again. Put your weight right on your back foot. Okay? Hold your arm out further in front of you. And so, and you're going to start pushing over. She may feel a little tipsy. She's going to really rigid in your body. Okay? So push, Joe. Okay, right there. What happened?
Well, I felt afraid that I was going to fall.
Okay, now go back, do it more slowly, and feel what happens. Sense what is there before the fear arises. So, Joe, just quietly increase and slowly, smoothly increase the pressure. Okay? Do you feel it?
I wouldn't use the word hollowness.
What word would you use?
I like the instability factor of it, but I'm afraid that's
okay.
Too far.
That's, yeah. Okay, so feel first the tension, and then there's something in between, isn't there?
Yeah.
Well, you felt it. Yep.
I'm already past it. I don't know what that feels like. I really don't know.
We skip over really, really quickly because we don't want to experience it. Now, please sit down. Thank you. How many of you can recall a discussion you've had in the last week or so where you got a bit rigid? Okay. Exactly the same thing is happening there. Exactly the same thing. Somebody says something and it threatens our position and we immediately clamp down and we go through the... And in that clamping down, we've already felt the rigidity, felt the uncertainty or hollowness, felt the instability, felt that open space like I could be pushed off here, and now we've clamped down. That's how fast it is. Go ahead.
I'm going to work on that because I obviously don't feel it in real life, and I do feel a bit of this concept that when he started to push on me, I want to push back.
You're already into the ground. You've already gone right.
So fast.
And this is why I want to say it is really, really fast. Because when you find yourself pushing back, you're already on the other side, on the going into form aspect. Now, the reason I think this material is so valuable, most Buddhist meditations don't deal with this at all. They deal with another layer on top of this, which is the 6 realms, which is also part of chapter 6, like the anger, greed, instinct, desire, jealousy, and pride. And people, there's a very, very good meditation, it's very helpful. But they form through the energy that is accumulated in this reactive cycle of the 5 elements. And so people can work on those and never get at the way that these things actually form. And in here, if you go through, I think it is... it's in chapter 5. If I remember correctly. Yeah, on page 164. Take the fire reaction chain. Now, if you refer to page 225, You see the fire reaction chain. And, I mean, when you learn these, you'll be able to observe these behaviors in yourself and in other people. And that, and Joe, you're, yes, there is stuff to learn here. Learn it. Okay? Don't say, oh, there's a lot of stuff to memorize. Yes, learn it. That's it. You're in school. Okay?
Right.
There will be tests. Pardon?
All the time.
Yeah, actually, yes. Okay. So, if on page 225, any of you know a person who's just intense all the time? No. Or yourselves?
Joe.
Okay. Underneath that intensity, there is a feeling of aloneness. And under that feeling of aloneness, there is a fear of isolation or rejection. So, that feel, and the image there is a featureless desert. That's my own image, it's not a featureless desert. It's vast grasslands, but it's the same thing. It's just like open grass. There isn't anything, it's just grass for miles and miles. That's why I like northeastern New Mexico, because that's what the landscape is. Really works for me. You know, just but nothing, just open. You know, and we react to that by looking for anything to change the experience, something that we can makes us feel that we exist. So we tend to devour the experience, and then we end up burnt out. Okay, now if you go back to 164. Here's this person, Tom, and I've known many people, and I've observed this behavior in myself. And I'll just talk about myself here, because I don't have to cast aspersions on anybody else. It's very, very difficult for me in groups. I'm relatively shy, and I'm an introverted person. So if I come into a group, I've learned not to do this. But what I used to do was to look for a way to start stirring things up. You know? And so I would make some provocative comment, and that would be how I tried to gain entry into the group. Now, this is a really smart strategy, right? But what I was doing, I was right in this fire reaction cycle. I was, excuse me, feeling alone. Feared being rejected, didn't want to touch that feeling, so I would stir things up, and that would make a lot of intensity, and then I would feel more comfortable. Any of you can recognize this? All right. Now, here's this guy, Tom. He's a bit of a social outcast. Whenever he joins a conversation or group, he makes comments that are insightful and accurate, they're controversial and disturbing. Okay? Nobody here. The conversation quickly becomes more intense, with everyone reacting to his comments. After a short time, however, the people in the group grow uncomfortable with the level of intensity. They don't want to go this deep. They just want to socialize. So they move to less controversial topics. Tom now feels isolated and rejected again and stirs it up. He does this repeatedly. What does the group do? Isolates him. And now Tom goes into the hell realm. He feels everybody is against him, or into the Titan realm, whatever, because he keeps trying to join the group. So you see how the fire reaction lays the foundation energetically and in terms of energy for the emergence of the hell realm or the hungry ghost realm or any of the other realms. And one of those, when I was learned this material from a friend of mine, this I thought was really valuable, because what you're getting at here is how those realms are actually formed. Is this making sense to you? Okay. So, these are somewhat difficult meditations because of the speed with which they operate. And this is why we use this technique. Because, as Joe said earlier, this is like learning a part. This operates very, very quickly, we usually don't recognize it. And as I was describing that dynamic, I saw a lot of people going, as you began to recognize it in yourself. And that's good. So what we do here is we act out the drama. And that's what you're doing in this meditation. You're acting it out. So you imagine the Dakini in front of you, in this case the Earth Dakini, and she's beautiful. Think of the fall, richness, harvest time, all those rich colors, you know, like Thanksgiving, etc. Because Earth isn't just rigid. Earth is also nurturing, supportive. It is rich with possibilities. You think of a log decaying in the forest, you know, in the northwest I'm thinking of now, where you have these big trees that are just lying down and they're breaking down and all of their nourishment is becoming available to everything else. This is also Earth. And you just, in all of this stuff, so this is the Dakini. She captures all of those, or embodies all of those qualities, and she looks at you. Now, have you ever met a person that they just look at you and you feel like, oh my God, they know exactly who I am? Ever run into that? Okay, that's the feeling that you have when you look at the Dakini. She knows you. And there's like, everybody know what I'm talking about? Okay. So, do you want to engage that level of awareness? Because that's what she embodies. And that's a decision on your part. And you indicate that you do want to by making some kind of gesture to her. And that's what that element in the meditation. So what it is, that element in the meditation is connecting with your intention to move to that level of awareness. Now, as most of you know by now, whenever you move to a deeper level of awareness, things get more uncomfortable because you become aware of things that you weren't aware before. And I love it when people come in, as you get more aware, do you get a choice about what you're aware of? No, you don't. You get to be aware of whatever's there. So if you've been ignoring stuff, you get to a new level of awareness. Now you can't ignore it, which is why a lot of people don't want to do spiritual practice, because it puts some stuff in touch with stuff that they have built their whole lives around ignoring. And it threatens them. So a lot of people don't want to go there at all. So you say, okay, yes, I do. And then she raises this flask, which is made of topaz or some yellow stone or whatever, gold, metal would be fine, and pours it, actually it's with her left hand, sorry, because the left hand symbolizes wisdom in Tibetan tradition, and pours this into you, and you feel this elixir of earth pouring into you. Now, it's yellow, but just imagine the liquid gold is pouring into you, and how does that feel like? Warm, yeah. I remember after the first three-year retreat, I was married at the time. We'd both done the first three-year retreat, and we decided that we were going to ask Rinpoche to do the second three-year retreat, a second three-year retreat. And we weren't totally sure he would give permission, and we didn't want to actually ask and get a no. So we talked to our retreat director, and he went and talked with Rinpoche privately and then came back and said, I think you should go and see Rinpoche. So this is how you do things in the Tibetan tradition. So he went up to see Rinpoche, and I remember walking into his room, and it was like the air was made of gold. It was just like, ah. Because he was really happy that we wanted to do a second three-year retreat. So it was just like, wow. So imagine that feeling of that warm, rich, nourishing, nurturing, you know, everything that is wonderful and positive about Earth just pouring into you. And that's what you feel in your body. Okay? And it comes down into the Earth center. And as it comes in, you feel all of that nurturing and warmth and, you know, all of that support you get from Earth. And what does this put you in touch with? All the rigidity and tension in your body, which you're holding like crazy, but don't actually need to. Because when we move into that kind of awareness, we become aware of all of those parts of us that aren't there. Okay? So now you become aware of all of that rigidity and you're open to it. And not only the rigidity, and if you can't actually feel these things, you just imagine them. Not only the rigidity, but also that uncertainty and hollowness or insecurity or whatever you want that underlies any rigidity. And this is very, those of you who are therapists and things, when you're working with clients, when clients get rigid, it's because they're feeling uncertain. And they're protecting themselves against that feeling of uncertainty by being rigid. And you can see this playing out in the political realm all over the place. So you open to that, and as you open to that, you become aware of this fear of instability. If I let go of this position, I won't know where to stand, and I'm just going to be knocked off, and I'm going to be like, and everything's going to fall apart.
Ah.
That's the earthquake. You with me? Okay. Okay. And then you feel that earthquake, and you feel that impulse to grab. And just as you experienced, Joe, when you're doing this little thing with the body, when you feel the full that grasping take over, you realize this locks you up. You don't have any place to move. You don't have any place to move because you're totally rigid. And then the pressure increases and you go around again. Now, in the course of the meditation, and when you're doing the meditation, you don't need to go round and round and round. You just need to go through and identify each component of the reaction chain. There it is. Oh. And then you open to experience all of those together. So the rigidity, the hollowness, the uncertainty, the earthquake, the open earthquake, the impulse to grasp, and the feeling locked and imprisoned. You just experience it. Doesn't have to make a lot of sense. You just open to all of that. And that's that ecstatic way of working.
Ecstatic?
Yeah, just open to everything. And what you're feeling is this, the working of this whole cycle in you. And in the beginning, yes, it will take a little familiarity, but as you learn this stuff and do this again and again, you become more familiar with it and you start experiencing things in these terms. So you're learning a new language here. And just a sec. And then and all this time the elixir is pouring into you because it's this heightened awareness that you're receiving from the Dakini that's making all of this possible. And as you open to all of this, you become aware of a stability that doesn't require any support. Huh. And you find that in the experience, it's not opposite to the experience. It is actually in the experience of that reaction chain. You find yourself, I can just be in this. And there's a stability there that doesn't require any support. Oh. And that's when the jewel forms in the earth center. And then you let yourself feel that, and that's the where you moved into what I translated there as evenness, pristine awareness, I think, or sameness, pristine awareness. Because when you feel that stability, then everything becomes just experience. That's it. Now, I would actually have changed my translation of that. It's the pristine awareness of balance. And it's very interesting because I came back from this retreat. I'd done a 3-week retreat in Colorado many years ago, and where there is this Tibetan term called nyamni. Nyamni yeshe, which is almost always translated as evenness or sameness, pristine awareness, or the pristine awareness of equality, because nyam means equal and ni makes it a noun, so like equality or evenness. And I went to visit an old Tibetan friend of mine in Santa Fe, and I said to him, just out of curiosity, Lobsang, what's the Tibetan for balance? And he went, nyamni. And I went, oh! I went, oh, okay. That's because it's taken us a long time to figure out what words actually really do correspond experientially to what words, because most of the academics got it wrong. So we have this instability, and now you have the stability which doesn't need any support, you feel completely in balance. And everything is just experience. And now the elixir pervades your whole being, you have that jewel of stability at the core of your body, and now you can just invite in all of that energy from the universe, all that comes in the forms of dakinis, so that your whole being is permeated with the sense. And that doesn't feel too bad. You get to feel good sometimes in this. Okay? Joe, you had a question.
And you approach the question really in this last part. I find as I enter into this meditation that a good way for me to understand it is how it differs from the meditations that I've done up to this point. And it seems to me that in a lot of cases in our work on Tibetan classic texts that we've done, it was important to remember that it was what is laid out there is often descriptive rather than prescriptive. But in this case, it is actually prescriptive. Like you said, if you don't feel it, imagine it.
We need to qualify that a little bit. It's actually descriptive still. It's a description of a level of experience that most people just aren't aware of. And what we're doing is because it's difficult for us to be aware of it, we're putting it into dramatic form and acting it out so that we are familiarizing ourselves with it. And in this way, it is different from the meditations that you've done up to this point. But this approach to familiarizing yourself with what it feels like to be completely awake and in attention, that is the characteristic of Vajrayana. You know, if you take Chenrezig Zi or Avalokiteshvara meditation on the embodiment of compassion, you imagine what is it like to be the embodiment of compassion. And so it's a sort of a prescription, but it isn't saying, you know, you have to be this way. You're imagining what is it like to be that way, and this puts you in touch with all of the other parts of you that say, I don't want to have anything to do with it. And so it allows all of that to unfold. And this is how this is described in traditional texts. It's using the result as the path rather than the genesis as the path, if you follow.
Yes, it also cuts out one of my routes of escape.
Which is?
It's descriptive instead of prescriptive.
Yes, I'm all for cutting out those routes of escape.
And another example of that is when something as simple as imagining the dakini, in my case, it's always a projection of something I already know, so the dakini has the possibility of taking on the face of somebody I know. But I would usually examine that dynamic, but in this case, I feel that it's more fruitful to just let it be and go forward.
Yes, definitely. Because it probably won't stay with somebody you know for very long. You know, I mean, there's a certain person that, to my mind, embodies all the warmth and nurturing of Earth. This is a friend of my mother's in Yorkshire, and even though she wasn't a family relationship, he always referred to as Aunt Flo. But my mother once told me that she had said, you know, Rachel, if you ever commit a murder, you can always come here. Now, that's Earth energy. Like, so, and so it can be helpful to remember certain things like that. You know, when did you feel completely supported in your life? Or who's somebody who provided that? And that'll put you in touch with something. Okay, and then just let yourself feel that. Okay, so I've gone through the earth element very easily. Let me go through the other ones in the same way, if that's helpful. And I think I'd rather do it as this rather than as a form of meditation, because you're more relaxed now, and so it's more likely to go in and meditate. You're all tense. Steve.
Just one quick question. And these are, as Betty had said, had the same. Some of these words don't necessarily strike everyone the same way. When you go to this hollowness word, it's not resonating with me. Where you're going with that? Is there another description of it? Because you're going from rigidity to something, and I'm not.
Well, the best thing to do is to. Okay, stand up. Take off your headphones. What's your name?
Paul.
Paul? Okay. So, Steve, stand up. And just stand over here. Paul, you stand behind him. Face back.
What?
Yep. Face back. Okay. Now, you're going to put your hand up just a little behind him and catch him when he falls. Okay? Hi, Steve. Now, I want you to lean back very slowly. Okay. Now, just right at the point you're losing... Okay, that's very good. Paul's going to catch you. You don't have to step back, but I want you to feel this whole thing. So just lean back.
Keep going.
But just stop when you feel... Just before you feel unstable. No, you went too far. Just stop just as you're beginning to feel unstable. Okay, now stay there. What do you experience? And you keep your hands up just in case he falls over, please, Paul. Yeah. Okay, that's what I'm referring to.
It's hard to articulate. So.
Yeah, but it's not... You're not quite sure where things are. Just before things get... Once they become unstable, you know where you are and you don't like it. But just before that...
Okay, so there's... Okay.
You're a lot quieter with headphones on.
Okay. Question?
No.
Okay.
I mean, the word is uncertainty, but I guess... I mean, you said hollowness or uncertainty.
Yeah, that's I've messed around with the word a lot, and those seem to be the ones that are closest to it. Mm-hmm. But what I'm doing here is trying to point you to the experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, another way that you can come across this is recall a conversation where you were absolutely sure about what you were saying, and then somebody introduced a fact which caused it to be questioned. What do you experience right there?
Uncertainty.
Yeah. It's like, and if you open that feeling, it feels like, oh, the ground just shifted.
Are you saying that the hollowness refers to...
Microphone, please.
Are you saying that the hollowness refers to the fact that there's no structure, so there's...
It's the beginning of the disintegration of the structure which has supported your position.
And so that imagining something to be hollow, by definition, in that space, there is no structure.
Yes. The image that I have, and why I use the term hollow, is here you have, the rigidity is like an eggshell. It's hard. But inside, there isn't anything solid. And so when you go under the rigidity, you find what the rigidity is protecting, which is that, I'm not really sure where I am. I'm not sure what I'm doing. I'm not sure what I'm standing on. And so there's that uncertainty or hollowness. And then you hit the actual instability, which the rigidity is really protecting against. Any time that someone is adamant about a position, you know, actually, that they're unsure of it. And this is where the stuff is really useful in day-to-day life. Whenever I find myself expressing myself adamantly about things, I go, I get suspicious now. Why am I being so adamant about it? Because if I really was confident about this, I would just say, well, that's how it is, and I wouldn't be adamant. That makes sense to you? You can tell a real master of a discipline because you don't have to impress anybody. It's the ones who aren't so sure of their master status that are showing off. Striking any chords? I see you're enjoying this, Betty. Okay, so that's the Earth reaction and how the Earth, I really want to emphasize that stability that doesn't require any support is found in the experience of the reaction chain. It isn't something which comes from outside and opposes it. You experience all of these elements and you find, I can just experience all of this. And then you imagine that as the jewel, and that gives you a symbol to work with. Again, that's just helping the old mind form a different relationship with experience, which is what we're doing here. And then you feel yourself flooded with the energy, everything turns to light, sit in the light for a while, and then you start with the water dakini. Now, the water dakini, she's totally different. Okay? Whereas the earth dakini is fall, richness, support, nurturing, everything like that. The water dakini is like the clarity of winter after a snowfall. I know we're in Southern California, you probably don't recognize this, but you've had the snow, the world is completely white, everything is absolutely clear. We sometimes get this here after a rain. You know how clear the sky gets. But everything is crystal clear. You look into her eyes and you know you don't have anywhere to hide. Absolutely nowhere. Nowhere to hide. She knows everything about you. Now, when you imagine that, what do you feel? You look into this person's eyes and they know everything.
Exposed.
Good.
Exposed.
Okay. And that's important to touch that. Because now you are going to make a gesture to show that you are prepared to move into that same awareness. And what a lot of people forget is if you move into that awareness, you no longer can hide from yourself. This awareness business is massively inconvenient. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, she's dressed in white and silver and all of that stuff, and holds a crystal flask in her left hand. And so when you make this gesture, she moves towards you and pours elixir into you. And it comes down, and you feel that total clarity. You know, just everything becomes vividly clear. And of course, as things become vividly clear, everything that you aren't clear about, you know clearly. So you begin to experience the water reaction. Now, the water reaction is very interesting. How many of you can recall being asked a question that you didn't want to answer?
No. Just now, standing over.
Okay. So, when we're asked a question that we don't want to answer, but we don't want to break the connection, if we don't care about the connection, we just say, and we walk away. But we don't want to break the connection, what do we do? That's exactly right. What did you do with your body? You see what we're doing? We're dodging and weaving. We're trying to deflect the energy of that question. And there are all kinds of different ways we can do this. But so we become very fluid, and that's exactly what everybody did with their body. They started moving their body like a wave, you see? It's because we're experiencing that question as a threat. Not consciously. You know, this stuff is really, really fast. But that question feels like a threat, and we're trying to get out of the way of it. Okay? But if it's a good reporter who's asking these questions, they pin us down. And now we feel like we're being carried away by this wave or current. And how many, you go to the ocean, do you know the feeling of when a wave picks you up? Have you done any body surfing? There's that first moment when the wave picks you up and you go, okay? So that's the feeling. Loss of control. This is just taking me away. Same thing if you step into a fast-moving river. You know, that current can just knock you off your feet and you're gone. And so that's... And when you do that, what we try to do is disperse that energy so that it doesn't happen. And it doesn't work, of course, and we end up getting frozen by it. Now we're like in ice. And, you know, we can't move because our efforts to disperse have exhausted all possibility of movement. Think of Bill Clinton in the Lewinsky scandal. He dodged and weaved and dodged and weaved and dodged and weaved and with nowhere to go. He was a very good dodger and weaver. It all depends on what the meaning of his is. And then we just go through the cycle again. And again, again. It's very, very fast. So that's one way of doing it. You know, just if you want to play with this yourselves, just form it a pairs, and you can give them a question. Ask me this question. It's a question you absolutely don't want to answer. And the person just asks the question. You don't have to answer it. You just have to feel what's going on in your body. And it's all going to be there. And the other person says, no, I really need an answer. It's all there again. Please just answer the question. And you can just feel your body doing all of this stuff. You with me on this? Okay. Now, that's what we feel is this... the elixir of from the water dakini, which is the elixir of mirror-like pristine awareness. Because as we open to all of that, we find a clarity in that experience. Like, oh. Now, I've been doing this in terms of questions. And one of the things is that, oh, I don't have to answer this question. I don't have to say anything. That could be the clarity. Can I have a couple of volunteers so I can illustrate this in the body?
Okay.
Okay. Right. Hee hee. Okay. No.
I experienced that as a threat.
Very good. Right foot forward. Back of the hands. No, one hand, just the right hand. Okay. Now, I'm terrible with names today.
Mary.
What I want you to do is stand a bit closer to Melissa with your right foot about a foot more forward. That was 6 inches. More forward. Yes. Oh, okay. That's good. And your foot a little more forward, Melissa. Okay. More forward. This is water. This is connection. Bend, both of you bend your knees. Ah, good. Now, what I want you to do is to push very, very slowly right at the center of Melissa's body. Now, you see already you were in the earth cycle.
Earth.
Yes, okay. Don't do earth, do water.
Center of the body, meaning right here.
I'm no, you, you push right at her.
Do you want me to do water?
I want you to do water.
Oh.
Just go very slowly. There, okay. Now, you see what she's doing? Mm-hmm. So you adjust your thing. Keep going. And every time she moves, you adjust. Don't go rigid, Melissa. Keep it. So you see how Melissa's trying to avoid? Okay, that's the water cycle. All right? Now, go back. I want you to stay in that experience and don't do anything until it becomes completely clear to you which way she's moving or which way she's pushing. Just stay right there and do nothing. And when you know which way she's moving, just turn. No, you're already backing up. Go back.
When I know which way she's moving...
You just turn your body.
Turn your body down.
Turn your body.
Okay.
See? Do you have any push, Mary, from that point?
Did I feel a push?
No. After she turned, did you have any place to push? Do it again. Let her get much closer, Melissa. Yeah. Okay. Now, do you have any push, Mary?
Just a speck.
Yeah.
Really.
No, you've lost it, right?
Yeah.
So that's the example of clarity emerging in the experience. Because if you go back and do it the other way, where you just try to avoid it, disperse the energy. You see? You get it?
Mm-hmm.
So when you try to disperse, it's very easy to get trapped. That's what happens with the water. That's the frozen piece. And whereas if you just rest in it, that way, okay, we'll go that way. Done.
How is frozen different than rigid, than earth?
You don't have any place to... Well, they feel very similar in a certain sense, but the way you get there is, in the earth one, it's the impulse and you're grabbing. And this one, you end up frozen because you're trying to avoid.
Okay.
Okay. Now, anybody here from the South?
The St. Louis, Missouri, you were on the edge.
Yeah, that's right. So, anybody had interaction with a Southerner recently?
That was from Kentucky.
Well, that'll do. So, you know... You bring up a topic, and they say, oh, you don't want to talk about that, my dear. Why don't you have a nice mint julep? You know, and they just take that energy and move it. They're wonderful with water. you know, and but you can't get anywhere because they're moving all, they're just fantastic at dispersing energy. That's the American culture, that's where that comes up. Yeah. Other parts of the country, they have other stuff. Okay. So, in that clarity, experience arises with the same kind of clarity that you see things in a mirror. They're just there. It's not like they're reflected. They're just there. When you look in a mirror, like if you look in the reflection of this glass functions well enough, you can see all of those reflections. They're just there, and they're completely clear. You know, nothing made them clear. They are clear. That's what mirror-like pristine awareness means. It's just, they're completely clear. And when they're completely clear, then you know what to do. It's so simple. Yeah, right. Pardon?
It's not, you know.
Well, it is, actually. It's the stuff that gets in the way. And that is symbolized as a mirror or a crystal, whichever you want, at the solar plexus, because that's where we feel emotion, right there, you know. Put your hand on your body halfway between the navel and the end of the sternum, and you feel a little crease in there, okay? And you push on that, maybe a little tender. That's your emotional center. Do you feel that? Yeah. So when things aren't going quite right in the conversation, that's where you feel it. Okay? So, and then again, you invite in all of that energy into your whole body, etc., and just thousands and thousands of water dakinis coming into you, and you feel wonderful and totally clear. Everything dissolves into light, and now you get the fire dakini. Making sense to you, Joe?
Yeah.
Good.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Now, we've already talked about fire a little bit. Consuming intensity. It's about passion. But whenever you... Have any of you run into a person you felt just be trying to devour you? As I said, I'm a little shy, introverted person. I was up at a conference. I was giving a presentation, which I did a very bad job on, in Santa Barbara a couple of months ago. But over lunch, I met this person associated with this organization, but I wasn't properly introduced. So I didn't really know who she was. We sit down for lunch, and she says, "Tell me about your spiritual path." She said, "Tell me about you." I said, "What do you want to know?" "Tell me about your spiritual path." I have never met this woman before. And so, but that to me was like fire coming at me. And so I felt very alone at that point. Now I learned later that, and of course this is not going to happen now, she was actually interested in me because she might have wanted to study with me. So, clearly, she was in fire reaction too, because she was feeling alone and uncertain and all of that stuff, so she was making it really intense. You see how it plays out? So, anytime you find yourself going at somebody, or somebody going at you, you got fire going on. Okay, that consuming quality. And underneath is that aloneness or loneliness. And underneath that is that feeling of rejection or isolation. Now, I remember a situation at one of my business clients. I happened to be in the room with the head of HR, and the president of one of the divisions called her. And it'd been made clear to him that he had to fire his assistant because his assistant had been sexually harassing somebody. And the assistant worked for him, but he realized, you know, he had to get rid of him. And so he was calling up the head of HR and says, I really have to do this. And the conversation quickly became difficult, even though I was only hearing one end of it. And I just wrote on a piece of paper. I knew this guy. I wrote on a piece of paper, make connection with him. Because when a person's feeling alone, you make connection. So she said, do you want to talk through this again? We've talked through it before, but I'm happy to talk through it with you again. And no. Do you want me to come down to your office? And so she just kept making connection. And after about 5 minutes, he said, no, I know what I've got to do. And fine. But by making connection, she was undoing that feeling of aloneness or that he was feeling about having to take this difficult step with his assistant. So, again, very, very practical tools come out of this stuff by understanding what's going on in the fire cycle. So, here we have the fire dakini. So, she's enclosed, they're like flames, and just, you know, and not uncomfortably hot, but I mean, you run into this all the time in your business, Joe. People who are passionate about things, directors and so forth, you can feel that intensity and vibrancy and that vitality and all of that good stuff about fire, which can be nurturing, you know, it can be warming and things like that, but it just energizes. And there are people who can walk in and just fill a room full with energy and get everybody moving. I was up at Mammoth with a friend years and years ago. We went to we'd had dinner in one of the restaurants, the Whiskey. And upstairs at the Whiskey, they have a band in the evenings. And he was a musician himself. And so we went up there, and the band started playing. And in 2 minutes, everybody was up dancing. And he just looked up and said, good band. They got everybody moving quickly. And I went, oh, that's how you judge whether a band is good. How quickly do people get on the dance floor? And so just everybody was up because they had that fire and passion and the vibrancy in the music. Everybody wanted to move with it. So this comes up in the arts all the time. So that's what this woman is like, this dakini. So it's just all of that passion, and you look at her and, you know, and you sort of go, because, you know, it's going to be wild. It's probably going to be great, but you know that it's going to be wild. Do you want to engage this? You know, and you say, make your gesture, and she pours this elixir into you, and you just feel yourself filled with this passionate, fiery energy in all of the positive ways, you know, all the ways that are good. You know, not stuff that just burns out, but something that's really enduring and positive, and connecting, energizing in all kinds of different ways. And of course you feel all of the parts of you that are scared of it, don't want to have anything to do with it, are shut down, you name it. A lot of people, when they're doing something that they really, really care about, you know, when it actually comes time to do it, there's stage fright. They go, and they feel very alone, and they have to go out and not, even though they really, really want to do this, they have to go out and do it by themselves. And so you have all of those parts in you going on, and you just open to the experience of them. So what's the fire cycle? One is this consuming intensity, underneath of which is, as we went through with that whole discussion around Tom, and about being provocative in groups and things like that, is this... feeling of aloneness, underneath that, the fear of rejection and isolation, which is like this blank desert. Think of Joshua Tree or what have you. And then you just seize on something and devour it. And in that, and you find yourself consumed. I mean, as I'm talking about this, it's a bit like bulimia in a certain sense, isn't it? You know, because, you know, they're feeling very alone and they just consume and
experiencing devouring.
Yeah. So, and so you go through the cycle step by step, feeling each stage and, you know, like that. And then you sit in the whole mess. And then you find that there's a knowing there. And what is this knowing? Let me give you an example. Think of somebody you know. Yourself. And just imagine them in your mind right now. And think of one of their qualities, something you like about them. Okay, how do you know they have that quality? Okay, now, you know they have that quality because you know the person, right? But it's rarely is it a process of deduction or rational deduction. There's a different kind of knowing, just knows. Do you know what are you in touch with what I'm talking about? Okay, that's the kind of knowing that I'm talking about here. You just know. And it's not a knowing. It's a knowing which doesn't depend on rational deduction or inference or induction. I think there's one more, but I can't remember. Or analysis. It's a direct knowing, and there's a connection that comes through that knowing. Recently there was this match at Wimbledon, which it was 11 hours. And the final set was 70 to 68, okay? And that broke the previous record, which was one in which Agassi, where they played for 5 hours, and one of these things. And when you play that level of tennis for that period of time, there's not much left in your body. And when Agassi, and I can't remember his opponent at that time, but after this 5 hours, a grueling match, which Agassi in the end won, they came back and they were both lying on tables in the locker room and they were getting massage. And their hands were like this, and Agassi took the other person's hand, and they just held the hands together for several hours because they were so wiped out from this experience. But because they had been in this very intense experience with each other, they knew each other intimately and were connected. Even though tennis is a ritualized fight. But you form this kind of connection either through fighting with someone or through making love. Same kind of connection. It's that direct knowing. Through, you know, really intimate knowing, that's the kind of knowing that I'm talking about here. This is the kind of way we can have this kind of knowing in our lives. And that's what the fire cycle is about, where you have that intimate relationship or connection with everything you experience, so you know it. Just to give you another example, pick up any object. I have a battery here. But any object that fits in your hand, you know, a cup is fine, okay? Now, you can look at the object, all right? You know what the object is, okay? Now, instead of looking at it, know the object. As you look at it, know it. What happens in your experience there? Microphone, please.
You soften.
Okay, what else?
You understand it?
Say it again.
You understand it?
How deep does the understanding go?
Very deep.
How deep? Is there an end to it? Look at it.
In this case, yes, but I'm guessing you're getting to know.
Well, when you say yes, where did you stop?
It's inanimate.
Okay. It's a ballpoint pen, a rather nondescript commercial variety. Now, know it. Know it completely. Now tell me your experience. Mm-hmm.
You feel it here.
Yes.
In your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's deep.
Yeah. And it's just a ballpoint pen, but there's the plastic, there's the ink, there's the nib, there's all of the different crenellations in the plastic, right?
And I guess. You do feel it.
Yeah. Okay. That's the knowing we're talking about. Now, how often do you have that kind of knowing when you sit down with a friend? We don't usually relate to people this way. What would it be like if we did? What would it be like if we related to everything we experience this way? What would your life be like? Well, it wouldn't be empty. Okay, so this is the kind of knowing. So in the middle of this, all of this consuming and feeling alone and rejected, you find this knowing, and you find that that knowing actually brings about real connection to your experience, just the way you experienced with that. A little different, isn't it? Okay. And that is what is called distinguishing pristine awareness. Distinguishing because we see all the differences, everything that distinguishes. We see incredible detail when we do this.
Could you talk about the rose of the lotus as the image that comes up?
Sure. What did you feel when you were looking? What were you looking at? Your magic marker there?
Yeah.
Okay, microphone, please. So you want me to talk about the rose as an image? Okay, thank you for, because that's the part I've missed. Now, when you look at this highlighter.
I don't feel a connection to it.
Okay, so open to it. Know it.
Know it.
Know it. Know it.
It just feels light.
Okay, keep opening to it. What do you notice about it? Tell me about it.
It's worn. It's old. I've used it for a long time.
Yes.
It's lasted a long time.
Do you notice the change in your voice just there?
Not really. But yeah, now that you pointed out.
Yeah. What's going on?
I use it for my teaching. And
what's your voice expressing?
Emotion, I guess. A softening.
There's your rose. You're falling in love with it.
Well.
No, but you can hear it in your voice.
Yeah, yes,
because right. It's bringing back all those memories. That's all those associations.
Yeah.
So now you're knowing your experience. And out of that comes passion.
Okay.
And so here's this plain old magic marker, but as you realize, this has been with me for a long time, and all of that teaching comes in, and now it becomes a very rich experience. That's exactly how it works.
Okay, good.
Steve.
So one of the questions I have is, like, that was a great experience, but I would never get that from reading this.
I have to write another book.
So, but I mean, when we come up with something that we like, when I read Rose Lotus, I had no real. So I moved on. What would you suggest? Because a lot of this is difficult without you sitting here and, you know, it's being recorded.
That's why we have teachers. As the elixir, this is page 221. Mm-hmm. As you sit in the field of light, the need to consume, the need for intensity, dissolves into light, and you become aware of how knowing arises when you connect completely with what you are experiencing. That's exactly what happened there.
Right.
Yeah, because at first she said, no, it's just this. And I said, keep. And then her voice just shifted. And you didn't notice it until I pointed out to you, but then you could hear the softer quality, the quality you refer to. And that was when connection was actually beginning to form. And that's what's when you connect completely with what you are experiencing. And that's what the rose symbolizes. So, yeah, it's all here.
I've heard this book.
Yeah, Steve very patiently listened to me read the whole thing. That's how we got the recordings. Okay, so does that help?
Oh, it definitely helps. Yeah. You should come every week.
No, I agree. I think each of these stages, you've given specific examples, and I think sitting alone will be a bit of a challenge, unless I can keep referring to this.
Well, that's why we thought it would be good to record this.
But to stay on the imagery and following it through, I'm not sure.
Well, as Joe said right at the beginning, this is learning. I went into a presentation last night, and in order to learn something so that it actually becomes part of the way that you operate, takes 3 months of daily practice. That's the minimum amount of time for something to become part of the way that you operate. And I would suspect that even if you do it 3 months very consistent, still after that, it takes a while. This is why in meditation, I don't pay any attention to anything anybody says until they've been practicing for 3 months. Because they haven't really started to know what the practice is about, because they're still just struggling with it. Around 2 or 3 months, things begin to form. And then there's another key thing happens around 5 or 6 months. So, yeah, this is very, very... You're learning a very different way to relate to experience. And then, so that's why when Melissa and Joe emailed me, I said, yeah, I know this is difficult. That's why I said, yeah, I'll come out and help you with this. Very happy to. But it's learning. And, you know, give yourself a break. Try it 100 times. Try it 1,000 times. You know. And maybe, you know, when did you learn how to catch a ball?
6 years old.
Okay. How successful were you at the beginning?
I'm sure not very good.
Pardon?
Not very good.
So what have you given up first time?
I'm sorry?
What have you given up trying the first time? Oh, I can't do this.
Right.
Yeah. It's the same kind of thing.
Right.
And after a while, you get quite good at it. Then you don't even think about it. You know, driving, like all these things to think about. Now we drive, we don't even think about them because we know them. And that's why we practice this stuff. We practice it so that it goes in and we actually start working with our own material and with our experience of the world in a different way. But it only comes through just repeating it over and over again. And yeah, this is going to be a bit of a jumbled up recording, but that's fine. You can go through it and then think, okay, this, this, this. So now you have that sense of this just knowing my experience, and that brings about a connection. And wow, okay. And it's not a rational, intellectual connection. It's not even really just an emotional connection. It's more than that. And your ability to sense it and to touch into it will increase through doing the practice. You follow? And so so now you invite all of that energy into you, and that's the fire dakini. And everything turns into light. Then you get the air dakini. I just need to keep track of time. I have no idea where we are. Oh, we're all right. So, now the air dakini is very popular in our lives. Air is about busyness. I'm trying to write a book. It's an amazing number of things I need to do now. I've hired a new person. She's helping me organize my whole apartment. That's absolutely vital. And it's at least 3 seconds since I checked my email, so I have to do that again. Yeah, it just goes on and on and on. It's about busyness. Why? Because you're busy in order to avoid that feeling of, I don't know who I am, which comes up when you write a book, when you write, quite frequently. I was talking with my brother, and he said, so what makes writing so difficult? I said, imagine that every time you sit down to write, you have to face all of the material which prevents you from knowing your own voice. Every time you sit down. He said, I'll never write a book. Too intimidating. He said, but that's what it's like. So we're busy because we don't know who we are or what to do. That's why we do things like, and you see this every time. Somebody gets a bad news, like they're fired, and what they do, they go back and start working at their desk furiously. Because it's just to make themselves feel like they know what they're doing. You know, they know they have to leave later that day or whatever. It's terrible. So, air dakini. Now, air dakini is in green. Fire dakini has a ruby flask. Left that out. And fire is connected with spring in the seasons. Air dakini is with summer. And why? Well, we don't have a lot of them here, but you go out to Huntingdon, you get a few more. You get these really leafy deciduous trees. I was just up in Canada. Everything was in the summer. You have leaves, and when the wind blows, just everything's moving, you know, so much. Everything's green. So, and air is about activity. So the activity dakini is in front of you now. Now, this is the person you know that whatever she decides to do, it's done. You just know that about this person. And if this is one really effective person. You ever run into this kind of person? Okay. What do you feel when you run into this kind of person?
Well, when I decide to do something, I do it. I mean, I identify with that.
Okay, great.
I specialize in busyness.
But I'm talking about effective action.
Effective.
So, you run into a person and they're just able to make things happen. Ready? Mm-hmm. You know someone like this?
Yes, I know a producer person like this.
Okay, so when you run into this person, what's that like for you?
Well, there's a great feeling of being taken care of, actually.
Yes, and then they turn to you and say, well, give you something to do. What's that like?
Well, I can do it.
Yeah, but you notice the little intimidation there.
Yeah, I can go back.
Because there's no fooling around here.
No, you can't.
No.
There's no this and this.
No, that's off the table. Okay. You know, they give you something. You know that they can do it just like that, and now you're on.
Yep.
That's it. Okay. So that's the intimidation you feel when you look at this person. It's like, okay, there's no screwing around here. And you make the decision to move into that level of effectiveness in your own life. That's what that's about. Well, that's why it's important to taste this stuff. Okay. I mean, are you getting the sense of the dramatis personae here, Joe?
I need more energy drinks.
No. That's the opposite way, because you're looking to get something from the outside with the energy drinks. You're looking for it to touch this inside. Okay. You do. And it requires that. So you say, okay, yes, I'm willing to step up here. And she pours this elixir into you, comes to the throat, because action begins with speaking. You know, there's an old joke, business joke. Four frogs on a log. One says to the other three, on the count of three, they all jump into the water. Right? First frog says, sounds good. It's a plan. Yep. I'm on board. First frog says, one, two, three. How many frogs are there on the log? Four. Execution is more difficult than making a decision. So, this is a person who executes. She just gets things done. And you're saying, okay, I'm going to step into that. She makes things happen. She's really, really good at it. And so she pours this elixir into you. And you can feel all of the parts that just fill up the time doing stuff that is just stuff. And you do it because... And I've come across this with several executives that I coach. I say, why don't you do this? Because doing this kind of lower level work is, that makes me feel useful. It's not their job. But they do it because it makes them feel good. And it really causes a lot of problems. But they're doing it to define who they are. It's a complete waste of time. So, and you feel all of this stuff. So here's the reaction cycle. You have this busyness, and underneath that busyness is the feeling that I have nothing to stand on. Nothing to say who I am. And underneath that is the fear of being destroyed or annihilated. Okay.
One more time.
Underneath that feeling of nothing to stand on is the fear. And so there's this feeling of just falling. You see? And the fear there is, I'm going to be annihilated. I'm going to be destroyed. I'm going to cease to exist. That's exactly what's going on there. And so what do you do? You get out of that by finding something to do. Oh, the room needs sweeping. I had a fight with my girlfriend many, many years ago, and I had a girlfriend, and in the middle of it, I just got up, went to the sink, and started doing dishes. Said, are you walking out on this fight? I said, absolutely. Why are you doing the dishes? Because the soap and the water make me feel good and it's calming me down. I was just doing something so I didn't have to feel all of that. Nothing to stand on, didn't know where we were going, etc. So I wanted to ground myself. So that fear of just falling, that's the open space. Now, this this comes up again and again in meditation practice, particularly in the practice of insight and vipassana, because you're looking at the assumptions which form the basis of your experience, and you're saying, there's nothing there. So in that level of meditation, one really gets used and needs to get used to this idea of just falling and falling and falling. Question?
No.
Okay. because that's what you're experiencing. And so you just sit down and you just start falling. And if you have that experience all the time while you're practicing, that's practice is in good shape. So you get out of that by starting to do something, and then another thing, another thing, another thing, and now you just end up in a whirlwind of activity and they're torn apart by that. And there are several people I coach and students I work with, I say they're just whirlwinds of activity, and I just say to them, you know, you can do anything you want, but you just can't do everything. But they're in this whirlwind of activity, so they don't have to face the question, what do I really want to do? Because they don't know. They don't know who they are or what they really want in their lives. So they fill it up with stuff. And so in this whole reaction cycle, you open to this, the elixir's pouring into you, and you find, oh, I'm just here. And I don't need to do any of this stuff. I know what to do. Now, how many of you have been caught up in a whirlwind of activity? Somebody stopped you and made you just say, okay, what really needs to be done? And you sit and you find it, and you go, oh, this is all I need to do. Have any of you had that experience? Yeah. Okay, that's what we're talking about here.
Do you know John Wooden's thing?
Microphone, please.
I just read this. One of John Wooden's teachings is activity does not equal effectiveness.
That's right. Yeah. And that's what I say. People say, I'm just trying to be efficient here. I said, yes, efficiency and effectiveness are two different things. If you're effective, then you're probably going to be efficient. But you can be very efficient and get nothing done. So that's exactly right. And so now it moves into the realm of effective action. And it's one of the reasons people consult with me, because I'm fairly often I'm able to say, okay, in all of those things, that's what you need to do. And they go, oh, that's all? Yeah, usually that's all. Do that, then things start to flow in a different direction. So this is about finding, by opening to your experience of confusion and the whirlwind and everything like that, you find an awareness which just knows what to do. And that's why it's called effective, pristine awareness. And so, what's it, the throat, the sword. A sword is a very effective instrument. You only have to use a sword once. Do you ever see the movie The Seven Samurai? There's a kind of a sad scene, but there's in it where two samurai have met, and one is a really, really expert swordsman. And the other person says, you know, let's do a duel. He says, okay, we'll do it with wooden swords. And so they, and the duel, they face each other, and it's just one strike. And the person who's challenged him says, draw. And the other person says, no, you lost. I don't believe you. We'll do this with real swords. And the guy says, okay. And it's exactly the same thing. And you see this scene of them, this is how Kurosawa shoots it. And there's just one strike. And for a moment, both are standing there. And then the one who challenged falls down. And the other person says, such a waste. But he's able to make that one cut. And that's it. If you want to read about this, there's some very interesting stuff in the Tales of the Samurais. Because most of the sword fights were just one cut. And it was over. And so, when you approach a situation, the effective action is, what's the one thing that needs to be done here that changes everything? You find that and you do it. A lot of people, they don't want to do that one at all. They don't want to go near it. So, that's effective action. And sword at the throat. Invite all the energy and everything turns to light. Now you get to the void dakini. Void dakini is really the most difficult because it has to do with everything. Now, the void dakini, you know, she represents space. And everything takes place in a space. So, you know, we have the space in this room, which allows furniture and us to be in this room. That's physical space. We have space in sound. It's called silence. Silence is the space in which sound occurs. Okay? We have space in movement. It's called stillness. Stillness is the space in which movement occurs. What we do time and time again is we put these as opposites. We say form and space are opposite. No, space is this physical space is the space which allows form to be there. And we say silence and sound are opposite. It's not the case. What happens is when we hear a noise, we stop hearing the silence. The silence doesn't actually go anywhere. We just stop hearing it. And it's a different way of experiencing your world when you listen to the silence whenever there is noise. You'll find it changes the way you hear things. It's the same with movement. We think movement and stillness are opposites. No, stillness is the space which makes movement possible. So when you're moving, be aware of the stillness in every movement. It will change things. It's a very good way to practice Tai Chi, for instance. This cup is completely useless if it's full. I can't put anything in it. So we ordinarily think space and what fills it. You know, and there's quiet in the mind, and we think of thoughts. And we think thinking and quiet are opposites. No. The quiet in the mind or the stillness in the mind is what makes thinking possible. So when you're meditating, you find yourself forgetting the space of mind. And so you get all caught up in your thoughts. This just means you forgot the space part of it. And so when you're meditating, just keep connecting with the space part. Don't worry about the thinking. It's just movement in the space. It's no big deal at all. You don't have to do anything with it. No, the thinking will pull you in. And usually through one of these five reactions. And as soon as you become aware of it, just come back to space. And, you know, and it doesn't matter if thoughts bubble up. You rest. And as you actually rest and connect with space, then you find a lot of things just sort themselves out. So, you have the space dakini. And she's blue, deep blue, high altitudes, high altitude sky. There is just infinite depth to this person. Infinite depth. You can look into her eyes and you can see forever. Know anybody like that? Trungpa Rinpoche was like this. I had a short meeting with Trungpa. And you looked into him, and you just felt like you were looking into outer space. Extraordinary. You're talking to him, and you felt like you were talking into outer space. Just went out into nothing. So, that's what it's like. And you indicate that you're willing to embrace that depths or that infinity of experience, whichever way you pour both of them. And so she pours the elixir into you, comes down to the crown of your head, which is not to this part, right in the center of your head, basically where the pituitary gland is. and you experience the void. So you're filled with infinity of space and awareness and stillness and, you know, all of the different dimensions of space and silence, etc. And of course, you immediately become a part, aware of everything that is all of the other elements. And that first manifests a kind of dullness, just a fog. And underneath that is the feeling of being overwhelmed. Now, how many of you know when you've, because this happens to me all the time, so I know this one very well, when you find a difficult situation, you just feel overwhelmed and you just go dull or sleepy or something like that. You know that reaction? Okay. That's the void reaction. Just, oh, you know. And underneath that is the fear of being nothing, which is the deepest fear in the human condition. We fear death, but the reason to fear death is because we fear being nothing. You know, we have this in Hamlet, to be or not to be. And that's what prevents him from committing suicide at that point, because he fears being nothing. And when we open to that, we just go blank. And that blankness is terrifying. I hit this all the time when I'm teaching people Mahamudra or insight meditation, because they hit this blankness and they panic. It happens very, very fast. And they just fragment. And they usually go into their intellect, which is a typical air reaction, but sometimes they'll do something else. But in the void reaction, you just break up into pieces, and every one of those pieces does a different element. So, maybe you've seen someone who's experienced a profound shock, and they're rigid, emotional, fiery, busy, and they're just a complete mess, you know. That's the void reaction. And they just, and you just dissolve into nothing, because you're broken up. I mean, it's right in our language, you know. We have airheads for the air people, and we have, you know, stick in the muds for the earth people, and we have, you know, sleazy for car salesmen, because they're doing water all the time. It's all in our language. And so that's the void reaction, and you open to all of that, which is a little uncomfortable, but you're big boys and girls now, so that's too bad. And you find in it the possibility of just experiencing everything. Everything. You become one with space. And when you become one with space, then everything that is taking place in the space is your experience. Everything. So again, you're finding the experience of space in the reaction chain, not as something that opposes it. That's really, really important. I didn't write about that in the book, I agree. So, and in that, that's totality, pristine awareness. And it's a ring of light is a symbol. For a circle is complete. Everything is there. You can think of the Enso in Japanese calligraphy, you know, the circles that the Zen people draw. It's the same thing. Just everything is complete. That's what the ring of light symbolizes. And now you just open to the totality of your experience. So, and then you rest there forever. Now, practically speaking, you're probably going to do best by working on one dakini at a time. So you do one, you start with the earth dakini, and do that with some detail. So you're really connecting with it. And then do all the other four dakinis very quickly. Just go through the motions. So you end up with everything, and then you sit in all of that unity. That's good. It keeps the body in balance. After a few weeks, then you move on to the water dakini. And now you do the earth dakini, just do it very quickly, and then you spend the time on the water Dakini, and then you do the other three after that, and you gradually move them all. And this is building facility with each one of them, step by step. That's what's important. Now, I have to leave fairly promptly because I have a dentist appointment. Yay.
So, I have a question. So
please.
Because I like precision or something. I mean, when you say work on the earth, if we sit for a half hour or should we sit for 45 minutes, do you do 20 minutes on the earth and then go through the others quickly, or?
Okay. You're going to spend 15 minutes just resting with the breath. Let everything settle down.
Right.
Then go through... go through the earth Dakini. You'll have to see. In the beginning, you'll probably just go through it once, and it'll take you, you know, 5 or 10 minutes, probably 10 minutes to go through it the first few times. And then you just go through the other four, and then you sit with all of that unity, you know, all of the symbols in their centers, and you just sit with that and rest for the rest of the period. As you gain with the facility with the Earth Dakini, you'll probably find yourself being able to go through it 2 or 3 times. The point here is, don't, when you're doing this, as you're learning it, just walk through it. Use crib sheets or whatever. You learn, memorize the material very definitely. The sooner you memorize it, the more it becomes part of you. And just walk through it. It's going to feel mechanical at first. And then gradually it'll start to build up a flow. And don't worry about it, me feeling mechanical. It always does. That's just part of the learning process. And so you do that, and then gradually you're going to feel more facility with it. And that's good. And then you're going to, as you gain more facility, then you're going to actually start touching into the experiences. And you don't want to go so fast that you don't touch into the experiences. That's important, as long as you're touching into the experiences. But the point here isn't to work through the experiences. That's not a good way to work. You'll end up in a mess of confusion and conceptualization if you do that. It's each experience, touch. Be in the whole mess of it. When you're in the whole mess, the whole reaction chain, then sit there and keep opening to all of the dimensions. You know, feel yourself pulled here, pulled there, distracted, the thoughts, associations coming up. Just keep coming back, the whole mess, until you gain some sense of, oh, I can just be in this. And then feel the jewel at the appropriate center, or the symbol at the appropriate center. And then just invite all of that energy in. You know. So you're actually working through a script. Okay, does that help? Right. Other questions?
Would you just circle of light? I got it. Union. This quality of unionness on the void. Last one. Just say something about that.
You're completely in your experience. You're one with your experience.
Isn't that the whole idea of the whole thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Two things for you. I feel you should say again what you just said you hadn't written about, just in one sentence.
Don't feel that the pristine awareness or what you find in the experience is in opposition to the patterns. You're finding it within your experience of the patterns. It's by going, opening completely to the experience of patterns, you find in that a space in which the pattern is taking place. And that space is the pristine awareness. So in the earth, you know, you're feeling rigid and tense and all of that, and you open to all of these different experiences, and you find, oh, I can just be here.
Okay.
Oh, and in the water, you're going like this, and you're trying to get away from it, and you're being pulled and tugged and washed away and things like that, and you open to all of that mess, and you go, oh, I can be clear here. And in fire, instead of consuming experience, you can just know. You know, and I mean, this comes up with love all the time. Rather than trying to reach for love, let yourself know love. Makes a little difference. You feel?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And with air, it's okay. Feel all of the stuff. Oh, I know what to do. And with void, just you're a million pieces all over the place. Oh, I can just be here. Which is exactly what Buddha did at the moment of his enlightenment. He touched the ground and said, I'm here.
So in a lot of ways, we're again talking about both balance on the one hand and presence to being present to whatever is actually happening
yeah.
on the other.
And finding clarity, knowing, stability or balance, whichever word you want to use, effectiveness in the experience, not trying to find these things and bring it to the experience.
Right.
So, and this is very while you're doing this, when you're doing the earth element, earth dakini, you'll see the section on 226, observing earth. Definitely do that at the same time. You can have very, you know, where is earth out of balance in your life? Where is it in balance? There's going to be a total inventory on your life. You go through all of these things. Mm. You know, and I mean, there are many more dimensions to it than I've, I just gave a bunch of things as suggestions, but earth is what provides support and structure to your life. Water's emotional connection and where things flow, traffic, cash, you know, you name it, water. Anything that flows. Fire is passion. Yeah. What makes things light up. And air is movement, activity. Void is your attention to space. So, you know, you'll work those, work that in your daily life. And, you have each other's shoulders to cry upon, so that's fine.
Yeah, we're really good at that.
Okay.
Thank you, Ken.
You're welcome. Other questions?
So, do we pretend, even if we don't feel it? Do we
yep.
go? Thank you. And is... So we're dismantling our reactive... emotions in these spaces, essentially. We're going there to do that? Is that...
What are you trying to get at?
I don't know, dude. The title is called Dismantling...
Yes, I know. But the book's out of date. You can throw it away now. Let's see. You know, this is Wake Up to Your Life 1.0. I've been teaching you Wake Up to Your Life 2.0 today. Don't think of dismantling.
Just experiencing,
because I mean, because you want to change something, it's very simple. Anything you want to change, bring attention to it. I've worked with a number of people on getting out of debt. First thing is to track all your expenses. You bring attention. I don't need to spend money, $5 on Starbucks every day. Well, now they're just saving $25 a week, like that. And it comes from bringing attention to it. So you've got all of these reactive patterns. This is a way of bringing attention to them. As you open to that experience, which is bringing attention to it. You don't have to do anything. You find that space in the experience. Now the reactive pattern is just experience. It's just stuff. And you're functioning in a different way. So, yes, it does dismantle them, but it isn't by you taking them apart. They fall apart by you opening to the experience. And it's very important that you put your effort into opening to the experience, not in taking them apart, because taking them apart, or the desire to take them apart, is just another reactive pattern. I'm cutting off lines of retreat here, in case you hadn't noticed. It's a good question. I'm sorry, it's just, this is outdated now.
One last question.
Please.
So you gave images for Earth that are fall, you know, waters, winter, fire, spring, passion, summer, air. What is an image for void?
Space.
Space. Could it be desert too?
No, that's fire.
Space. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, space. Just infinite space. Sky is your image for... Or is it ever been up to Glacier Point in Yosemite?
No.
Oh, okay, that's a good
place.
Yeah, we go up to Yosemite, and it's just like the whole Yosemite Valley, and it's just like, or you go up the top of the Half Dome, same thing. It's just like all this space. Or the top. Yosemite is a very good place to do that because it's good. But Grand Canyon is also good. I like Yosemite better for that. But if you can go to some place like that, and it's a very good exercise, is to go to a place to get the feel of the elements. So go down to the ocean sometime when you're doing water and just sit and watch waves for an hour or two. Yeah, and just watch. Or go up the coast where there's... there are waves breaking against cliffs. That's also good. So you just watch it, you know. Go and sit on, go up to Vasquez Rocks or something like that. And there's, you know, rocks. Earth. Or, you know, sit in the middle of a field, a meadow, or something like that. Trees, they're all about Earth. The trunks of trees I'm thinking of. Fire, you've got the sun, of course, but also, you know, candle, or, you know, just sit in front of a fire, watch how the flames, you know, just watch what the flames do, so you really get the stuff viscerally into your body, and then go to a place where there's just big open view. Eagle Rock, actually, up in Topanga, that's not bad. And that's an easy climb. That's not a bad place to do that. And so you just go and, okay, This is space. You know, there's not much to it. Okay? Mm-hmm. Good. Yes. All right. Okay, you're cooked. You didn't get much meditation done, but I hope this was helpful.
Very
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.